Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirschot, and this is the podcast for August 23rd, 2013.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
85 drugs are currently known to interact with grapefruit juice. And what happens is it boosts the amount of drug that gets absorbed into the bloodstream, so you're getting an increased effect.
There is no proof that anybody outside of individuals who have celiac disease or non-celiac gluten sensitivity requires this diet.
The only time you see trouble with the artificial dyes that are approved in the U.S. and the EU is when you really crank up the doses for an extended period.
This week, Science Update heads for the kitchen. We'll tell you how overeating affects the brain and investigate whether going gluten-free is a good idea. Also, is food coloring safe to eat? But first, Suzanne Bard tells us why people taking medications need to be especially careful if they drink grapefruit juice.
Drinking a glass of grapefruit juice to wash down certain medications can cause a toxic drug overdose. In rare cases, this has led to life-threatening conditions.
Like sudden death from cardiac standstill, acute kidney failure, respiratory failure, gastrointestinal bleeding. And the list kind of goes on from there.
That's clinical pharmacologist David Bailey of Lawson Health Research Institute in Canada. He and his colleagues discovered the problem by accident 20 years ago.
As a result of an interaction study that we had done between alcohol and a blood pressure lowering drug, and we had decided to use grapefruit juice as a way of masking the taste of the alcohol. And our results showed that the group that got the drug with grapefruit juice had blood levels that were about four times higher than we had expected. In other words, they looked like they were getting four times the dose.
Bailey says a digestive enzyme called CYP3A4 breaks down much of the oral medication we ingest, allowing only a small percentage of it to reach the bloodstream.
And it acts as a first line of defense so that toxins that we consume in our diet, and it can be from any source, whether they come from plants or chemicals, are inactivated before they're absorbed. And this enzyme normally does a pretty good job. For some medications, 90% of the drug is inactivated before it gets absorbed into the bloodstream.
To offset this, drug manufacturers put much more medication in each pill than you actually need. But a chemical in grapefruit called furanocoumarin inactivates the enzyme.
And what happens is it boosts the amount of drug that gets absorbed into the bloodstream. So you're getting an increased effect, which can be excessive. For some drugs, the increase may be large, but these drugs are sufficiently safe that there's very little change in the clinical outcome. But there are other drugs in which there is a large increase in the amount that gets absorbed that you have the risk of very serious toxicities.
Bailey says 85 drugs are currently known to interact with grapefruit, 45 with potentially dangerous consequences, including several statins, anti-cancer agents, antibiotics, and heart medications. He recommends that grapefruit lovers consult with their doctors or pharmacists to find out if any of their medications are on that list.
If you want your grapefruit juice, you can speak to your pharmacist or doctor about selecting a medication that produces the effect that you want but doesn't interact with grapefruit juice.
Older people are particularly at risk because they tend to drink more grapefruit juice and take more medications than younger people. Bailey adds that pomelos, a close relative of the grapefruit, and Seville oranges, a bitter fruit used in marmalade, have similar effects on the CYP3A4 enzyme as grapefruit and should be consumed with caution. Limes also contain furanocoumarin, but in smaller amounts.
Thanks, Suzanne. Gluten is a protein in wheat that helps bread rise. Many people have adopted a gluten-free diet on the assumption that it will improve their health. But according to University of Chicago gastroenterologist Stefano Guendolini, only a tiny fraction of the population is truly sensitive to gluten or have a more serious condition called celiac disease. Celiac disease causes inflammation of the small intestines, which can result in abdominal pain, fatigue, and constipation, among other symptoms. Fortunately, by eliminating gluten, most people's symptoms quickly go away. But they won't be able to get an accurate diagnosis if they go gluten-free without first consulting a doctor.
A couple of months on a gluten-free diet are all that is needed for the antibodies that are detectable in celiac disease to go back to normal. So that makes the diagnosis impossible at that point in time. All of this can be prevented by going to the doctor and do the proper testing and then decide what is the best procedure.
Guandolini says gluten-free diets are popular because people think they'll help them lose weight.
There is no evidence that the gluten-free diet helps in reducing weight. Now, of course, if you are eating a so-called normal Western diet, in which 50 to 60% of the calories are derived by starch, and then you decide to be going gluten-free, once you go gluten-free, you actually end up by removing a lot of starch from your diet. So you end up probably ingesting fewer calories, and this may lead to weight loss. But this is not related to gluten, has absolutely nothing to do with gluten. It has to do with the amount of calories and with the amount of starch that you eliminate. There is no proof that anybody outside of individuals who have celiac disease or non-celiac gluten sensitivity require this diet.
He says about 1% of people suffer from celiac disease, and another 1% have non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Next, some websites provide excellent medical and nutritional information, but others are sensationalistic and contain misleading information. Suzanne helps separate the wheat from the chaff.
If you believe the hype on the internet lately, artificial food dyes will make your children hyperactive, destroy your brain, or even kill you with cancer. We asked chemist Derek Lowe to separate the facts from the hyperbole. He says decades of safety research don't back up these scary claims.
Some people may remember red dye number 2 from back in the 70s. That was an example of one that was taken off the market in the U.S. There are some tests in rodents that show that it might cause cancer in the intestinal tract at very high doses.
Lowe says you'd have to ingest huge amounts of red dye number 2 every day to reach that dosage.
No one had ever found an association in humans, but at the same time, the FDA decided, well, better safe than sorry. We have other red dyes in the world, so let's get rid of this one. So that one has not been sold in the U.S. since 1976, but it's been on the market in the European Union ever since. It's still on the market over there, and no one has ever actually found an association with any kind of human health problem in the years since, but it's not like anyone's ever petitioned to bring it back in the U.S. either.
He says in the developing world, no food dyes have been conclusively linked to health problems in humans.
The only time you see trouble with the artificial dyes that are approved in the U.S. and the EU is when you really crank up the doses for an extended period.
He adds that researchers have been investigating possible connections between food coloring and hyperactivity in children for over 30 years. But the studies are contradictory and inconclusive.
The problem is that not all the studies have been very good. It seems like every one of them has a slightly different definition of what it is they were looking for, and the doses were all over the place. Also, what do you give them to dye in? Do you give them dye in a big handful of candy? Well, then that may have an effect too. Who knows? No one has been able to completely rule it out either. So my own take on this is that I personally don't think there's any association because there's not any really strong evidence for that. But at the same time, I can't say that I completely rule it out either. And it might be that there are some children who are unusually sensitive for reasons that we don't really understand. So it's not something that I just completely dismiss out of hand, but it's not like it's this massive problem that's easy to see in the statistics that anyone should pick up on, because it isn't. There's 30 or 40 years of this stuff, and people are still arguing if there's anything there.
Thanks, Suzanne. A molecule in the gut may help prevent overeating. This according to Yale University psychiatrist Ivan D'Arroyo. In the past, his team found that when mice were fed a high-calorie diet, their brain's pleasure response to food got weaker, and perhaps to compensate, the mice ate more and more. The overfed mice also became deficient in a gut molecule called OEA. In a new study, they found that restoring OEA to the gut reined in the overeating and even revived the mice's interest in healthier, lower-calorie foods.
Usually these animals show very low interest in consuming anything that contains very low levels of calories.
Their brain's reaction to calories also returned to near-normal levels. The findings may point to new ways to manage overeating and obesity. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, is there a link between hot weather and human violence? Also, were our ancestors really as warlike as we think they were? Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.